For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Steer, racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanshore, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey! You know what this is, don't you? This is a party, pal. And I want to welcome you to the party, pal, because we're celebrating today Green Day! Green Day. While we're here, it's not the band. Come on, it's not the band. It's St. Patty's Day, and I know that.
That's right.
Matt right now is taking a drink of his Guinness, and Aaron has green tequila. I know he claims that he doesn't drink or anything, but right now he's holding up a green tequila shot, and me, I've got some green Monster energy drink going on. So. Okay.
Aaron didn't know it was St. Patrick's Day because, he thought it was Thursday.
I totally thought it was Thursday.
When I got the message, I'm like, what? You're a day ahead. And then I looked at my watch. It's Friday.
No, yeah, daylight
savings. Thank God it's Friday, not oh shit, it's Friday.
Daylight savings time usually screws people up by an hour, screws Aaron up for a day.
For a week.
Well, I've been immersed. My wife's out of town because she needed a break from Tahoe. And I've been immersed in trying to get these 5 paintings done for the rally next weekend because my artwork makes a lot of money at the auction and really helps. So I take it quite seriously. So I've just been planted.
As opposed to everything else that you don't take quite seriously?
Yeah, you know, like everything else.
Like everything else.
Paying like the bills, all that kind of shit. Don't take that. So,
hi, guys.
Hey, I just wanted to say we saw some daylight here, which was good. And
I got a little sun outside today.
The sun was shining, and you do not know how much the sun shining makes my life so much better.
Right?
Because my mom does not get depressed, and she's not crabby. You wake up in the morning, you walk in, and you go, on a overcast day, and I go, hey, good morning, Mom. What the fuck's good about it? And I'm like, whoa, you know? And on a day like today when it's sunny, she's up. She's reading her book with the sun coming in her window. And I go, hey, Mom, how you doing? She goes, hi, you got any coffee? It's like a totally different day, okay? Just going to leave it there. We'll just, leave it on the table.
Funny.
But, hey, you know, F1 season has started. We missed Bahrain already. There's another race, I believe, today. I was just wondering, have you guys had the same problem? If you want to watch F1, you had to get up at like 2 in the morning. You had to tune into some weird online TV channel or do something. But like practices today, as we're recording this, for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. And today you can find the practice on ESPN2. Then you can find practice later on ESPN News. But race day, it's on ESPN. And that is how it is throughout the season. So hooray, because now you can actually see it. And to give you an idea, race day is 1 p.m. Eastern. So that means that out here, we can actually watch it at a reasonable time if you're at home or something like that. So it's pretty cool, because I had gotten so far away from even watching F1 because it was coming on at such goofy times. And I mean, I remember three seasons ago, might have been during the pandemic. Did you guys ever try watching it? It was on, you had to go to like some online channel or something like that. You just couldn't find it. It was just almost
easy. I just watched the one on Netflix.
Go to the show.
That's the only one. I just watched the one on Netflix. That's
just watch. Yeah.
Just watch the show.
I go into social media and get to the highlights.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Sometimes I'm like Googling, like, how do I watch this event? Like anything. Just like, how do I watch Indy?
Yeah.
And I think IndyCar is all NBC, but you never really know, like, is it on NBC proper during, you know, on a Sunday, or is it, is, can you watch qualifying? Is it streaming on the app, or?
Man,
it,
I know, like, why I they really do know. That. Okay. I mean, we, you know, but like, let's take Barrett Jackson or one of those type of auctions. It's like, oh yeah, man, they're going to be on the History Channel. You tune in, they go, it's not there. It's, they're doing some kind of thing about, you know, haunted houses or something, and you go, oh well, from this time to this time it's on FYI, and then you can, you know, it's like it's streaming over here. It's
yeah,
life's gotten much too hard. It's, I think, what do they call that, Aaron? First world problem. But F1 has gotten easier.
Yeah, I'm just enjoying your new accent, Brad. I'm enjoying your new accent.
My sinus accent?
Yeah, yeah.
I hope that I go back to normal at some point, but I've had this since November, and it
went away.
I've been to the doctor. I've been to the doc in the box. I've even done a phone doc when I was really desperate once. And hell, man, have you guys ever done the phone doctor?
Uh-uh.
My
We've
wife
done the vet, done the phone vet.
No, yeah, my wife turned vet. Me on to it. She goes, I woke up on Saturday. I was so miserable. I had the worst sign. I mean, it turned out I had a sinus infection. And I, she goes, just call the phone doctor. That's what I do. And I go, what? And she goes, you just call him up. And I go, do I have to go, you know? And she goes, no, they don't even need to see you. You just talk to him on the phone. I tell the guy what's wrong. You know, and he goes, okay. I'm going to prescribe you this, this, and this.
Here's some Vicodin, some Percocet. Here's some.
You're just getting one of everything.
I forgot about the sinus infection. I was on so much stuff. No, no. I mean, I got the stuff, and it was all easy. I didn't have to wait. My doctor, if I go on and it's like, oh, I need to make an appointment. Yeah, he can see you on July 5th.
Exactly. What the hell?
Jeez. But anyways, so that's my accent. Yeah, enough of that. Hey, you found a cool car on Silodome. Tell us about that thing. And I know Matt knows something about it, because this goes way back into the history of the show, or some of these cars do. So,
oh yeah, I sent you guys a link for Paul Newman's station wagon, one of his Volvo station wagons. I know we've had some discussions, and I was confused because it's kind of all over social media, and I saw one of them where it said Paul Newman's wagon in quotations, like it was a tribute. So I was kind of confused, but on Silodrome, it had like the complete story of, you know, of Newman's wagon. So Matt, I think you know more about these, don't you?
So the Newman wagon that's up on Bring a Trailer, the auction will end by time this ends, is interesting. So Newman had done a couple of-
Have you seen a price, what it's at?
Yeah, it's at $29,500, and it's got 3 hours and 45 minutes. So
that's it. Wow.
Right. But it's funny because, like, when the Neumann watch was for sale, there was the Neumann, and then there's the Paul Neumann watch. And what they mean by that is Paul Neumann had a personal Rolex watch that his wife, Joanne Woodward, got for him. She inscribed the back, and it was sort of became the model for Rolex to create a number of watches that they called the Paul Neumann watch with the oyster finish, you know, it's kind of this green colored deal. So you can go and buy a Paul Neumann Rolex, and they're all used, right? They're all historic watches, but his was his own. So they called it the Neumann, right? So you can get a Neumann watch and the Neumann. So kind of like the wagons where
they should Paul Neumann very... Hello, Neumann.
I know, right? It's because actually, I don't know if Seinfeld might have done something about the Neumann wagon on his show back in the day.
There's that tie in there, yeah.
Yeah. So Neumann created, he liked to do these hot rods. I don't know if I want to call them hot rods. What would you call them? Like K cars or kind of like stealth?
They were the bread box Volvos.
I mean, yeah. The wagons.
But he liked hot rodding them. They were hot rodded. I mean, they were. Sure.
But what's the term of the stealth modded car? Is it K car? I think it's K car, right?
K car. No, we always called them.
A K car is a compact, it's a Japanese car, like those little mini micro trucks.
On the street, what we would call them?
Yeah, there was a sleeper. Yeah,
sleeper.
I know, but there was another term for it. I don't know why I was thinking K car, but he liked doing those things. So he'd done a few wagons. So he took a couple of Volvo wagons and he swapped V8s into them. And as the story goes, and I'll get some of the details wrong, but he originally made three of the V8 cars, one for himself, one for, I believe, David Letterman, and then I think one for the head of his charity. I don't know if it was the camps or if it was the Neumann's Own thing or whatever, but there was three made. I'm pretty sure Wayne Carini has the Neumann V8 one, that one that he personally owned. Letterman may still have his, and then I don't know where the third one is. I think somebody else had bought it, but I don't recall who. And we did a shift and steer at SEMA years ago, and Wayne Carini was on the show, and I knew he had it, and I was trying to call him out on the air.
I remember that. You're trying to get it.
To say yes. I was just like, well, we're here, we're live. Why don't you go ahead and sell us that car? And he was just like, no, hard pass, not going to do it. He's like, I'm not selling that car. I'm keeping that one. And he's probably right. So, but the one that is on Bring a Trailer, Aaron, is another one that Paul Neumann had commissioned.
Okay.
But he put a Buick Grand National engine in it. So it's got the turbo V6 engine in it. It's got a five-speed manual, which is kind of cool. And it's got some aftermarket wheels and it's got kind of the aero kit. Now, why is it floating at 30 grand? Is because the Volvo wagon is worth nothing. And then the modifications and the Neumann effect amount for something, but don't look at it as dollars. Look at it as percentage. If it's a $3,000 wagon and it's up for 30 grand, that's tenfold because of that factor, right? If it was a $100,000 car and you got tenfold and it was a million, that would be an insane multiplier. So it's a very cool car, but it's not the best car out there. I mean, it's got 75,000 miles on it. It's got an oil leak. The interior is kind of ratty. The tachometer doesn't work. I don't know if the odometer works. So it's kind of one of these things. It's like, do you restore it? Do you not restore it? You know, kind of what do you do with it? I think it would be a fun piece. I kind of wished Adam Carolla would buy it, but he's kind of in a holding pattern, a lot of buy or sell or do anything.
I've got a question for you. So Volvo did not make a V8 at that point in time, correct? So with their S80 and their XC90 and like some of the more contemporary cars, they have V8s in them now. So what did Volvo get hip to this because of Paul, or
you know, I don't know what the influence was. So I think Newman also had
one. What year is the one that's for sale right now?
Oh, probably,
the one
probably
on for 80s. Sale is 88.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That, they did get hip to it. And I'll tell you how I know this, is that at Hot Rods by Boyd, they brought us a wagon in 95. And they said, hey, you know, there's been some celebrities that have hot rodded some of our wagons. Could you guys do one for us? We built it. And it was on display at the 96 Los Angeles LA Auto Show.
Oh,
and
wow.
We hot-rodded it. We two-toned it. We slammed it. We put wheels on it. And it was a turbo wagon. And I just looked it up because I was interested. And it sold at Barrett-Jackson as a comparison at Palm Beach for $15,070.
A Boyd car sold for $15,000.
A Boyd built hot rodded Volvo turbo wagon.
Damn.
For Volvo, because they commissioned it from us.
Yeah. Wow.
And I mean, it was, you know, we put 17 inch wheels on it. It had, you know, drilled brake rotors. It was a cool little car. It was bright yellow with a black top on it.
I'm gonna look for this.
They never said Paul Newman, but they said some celebrities had done some.
Right.
Okay. First of all, Q car was the term I was looking for, not K.
Never
Q
heard
car,
that term.
Never right? heard of
okay,
it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Q car. Huh. Newman did a few of these things. He had a '67 Volkswagen Beetle convertible, and in the back seat was a Ford Racing V8 that powered the car, and it was like. It was took up the whole back half of the car.
It was a Beetle convertible with that? I never saw that. That's cool.
Yeah, it's a Beetle convertible. And on the front hood, they put a radiator, so they put big grills in the front and stuff. So he did that car. I'll send you guys the link to it.
Yeah,
and then
fun.
he did a wagon with a V8, but I think this was a later version. So I think the Grand National wagon was earlier. That was the 740 wagon. And then he did a V8 car. It was a 960 wagon, but it was more in the 90s because I remember it being a Ford Racing crate engine. And then he put a Kenny Bell supercharger on it.
Wow.
Cool. Man, he had fun, didn't he?
Yeah. Some pretty cool stuff. So the one that's up there now on Bring a Trailer is, you know, it's got the Grand National engine in it. It's got the 3.8 liter Buick V6. It's got a 5-speed in it. Whoever's selling it, they just did a new, you know, clutch and throw up bearing and limited slip differential. And they did new tail lights and headlights and wipers and stuff on it, but the rest is pretty much stock. And it's, you know, it's cool. I don't know why the Volvo wagon
that car for him. Do we know?
I don't really know. I want to say there's a company called Hesco, HESCO Engineering in Alabama.
Okay.
That did the swap for him. So I mean, nowadays we would say who built the car, but I think he was just like, just engine swap it, right? Like, that's all you got to do. So I believe that's who did that. I don't know who did the other cars for him. But yeah, it looked like it'd be a fun piece. I don't think it's outrageously fast. But he also, when he did them, he liked to modify them. Like, this wagon with the Grand National engine in it is tuned and has like a chip in it, and it's made to be a little bit more horsepower than stock. And and the other wagon with the Ford V8 had the supercharger on it. And the Volkswagen Bug, I think, had a Ford Racing crate engine that was, you know, probably over 300 horsepower when that thing came
that
out.
That thing moved. Yeah.
Yeah. I bet it was loud and hot and just miserable, but I'm sure he just had a blast
Matt,
with that.
Matt, you forget. I grew up when those cars, big block cars and stuff like that, were new. They were all hot and miserable, and You just expected that, okay?
I mean, that's probably why he did the convertible, because it's like, I'm not putting air in it or anything like that. And it's going to be loud inside, so might as well just not have a top on it at all.
Yeah, I mean, he was living in L.A. in the 70s and 80s and just having fun, you know? I mean, doing what he wanted, living the Paul Newman lifestyle.
It seemed like a fun piece. And we've seen a lot of these things over the years, the Miata with the V8s and some of those.
Yeah, monster Miatas. Yeah,
I think there's a group out of Nevada that does 911s. The water cooled 911s and puts LSV8s in them.
And
you would think that it'd be a massive weight increase. And I don't think it is. They're like, no, we get a V8, aluminum block, aluminum heads.
I've looked into those and the motor fits in them very nicely.
Yeah.
Really wow.
I've talked about on the show back in, I'm going to say like 81 or 82, I came out to the Street Machine Nationals here in Pomona when they had it out here. And there was some dude who pulled up, and you can find it online, in a brand new 930 turbo that he had put an aluminum big block with Crower injectors sticking through the Lexan back window they had made. It was so wild and so cool. And the guy showed up at the time, what would have been the equivalent of a full semi rig now, you know, had the dually with the Chaparral fifth wheel trailer. Everything was painted matching and everybody got out, had shirts that matched. And I was talking to some doctor from here in town, and it was cool. It was a really cool car, man.
Another really cool swap. If you guys remember Rutledge Wood did a V8 Ooh. Swap in I don't know, like a 80 something 911. He did an RWB body kit on it. It's got a V8.
Oh, I do. He was working on that and I never saw it. Did it get done?
86. Yeah. It was an 86 car.
The RWBs are pretty cool. I followed them on Instagram and it's really blown up like crazy now. So,
yeah, I don't know if he still has it, if Rutt still has the car, but
I hope so. That thing was gorgeous. Oh, yeah, the green one. That thing was so
cool. The green, because I remember Richard Waitis from Magnaflow going out there and working on the car, and they kind of crafted up this kind of like chambered exhaust for it. And it was real tight package, like how to get a muffler, like the muffler is kind of tucked up high. Like I want to say it's up high, back by the motor, maybe even the rear fender well area. It was really complex.
To cram an exhaust system in those Porsches is quite a feat, because if they're underneath, they drag too much. So you got to kind of wrap them around inside the fender wells and do all kinds of weird stuff.
Yeah. So, but it's a V8 too, right? So they needed to make headers for it.
Right.
That went to, I think, catalytic converters and then to mufflers and then out. So The exhaust seemed more complex than almost anything on the vehicle, because there are swap kits for it, you know, like there's some engine mount kits and stuff that you can get. That's what I was saying. Like, I think that group out of Vegas does that, but it was cool. Here's a cool piece.
So I wonder if the mufflers, they design them in the wheel wells with like a slope to meet the radius of the tire so that the muffler heats up the tires and he gets better traction.
No, so that was the other thing. There was like lots of heat shielding, and it was complex.
Bet ya.
Yeah, it was pretty complex, but it was cool. It was cool to see. So, but yeah, that fits that Q car theme, right? Just kind of this subtle. I mean, of course, it's a Porsche, so it's already, you know, expected to be a performance vehicle, be quicker, whatever.
That's why.
What do you mean? Why are you saying that? You mean a Volvo sofa box car is not meant to be a high performance racer?
You know, back in the 90s when I lived in Florida, we'd go to the drag strip over like Palm Beach or wherever it was. It wasn't that far, it's gone now. And there was two really wacky vehicles that I'd see out there drag racing all the time. One was full on Volvo wagon with a V8, and it had a V8 swap. That thing was basically doing wheelie stands down the track, and it was so funny to see. And another guy just had like a Ford van. It was just a van, and he's just put slicks on the back, tuned that V8, gutted the rest of it, and this van would just do wheelies down. And it was
awesome.
And it was, you know, it's just this home built kind of piece of shit. It was all over the place, and it was just a nightmare. And he's trying to see out the window, and it's just like, it's just a crazy, but fun to see.
Sleeper cars like that are fun. There was a car for sale that I seriously thought about buying, and this was, God, I'm going to say 10 years ago. But it was a like a 77 Chevette that a guy took. It had 8,100 original miles on it when he did it. And he had put a aluminum big block Chevy in it and left it completely stock looking. Like didn't do some big narrowed rear end and all that stuff. Nothing was sticking through the hood. They put 15s on it and a narrowed 12 bolt, but they kind of tried to make it look as stock as possible. And they even put, like at the time, like four mufflers under it to make it quiet. And the only giveaway was that they had moved the firewall back. So the guy was sitting kind of like at the pillar, you know, because he was back farther. But other than that, this thing looked bone stock. And they showed pictures of it on eBay of it burning rubber. And I thought, that thing is so cool, and it was so well done. And I love cars like that, you know?
Oh, but, super fun.
And I showed it to my wife. She was like, yeah, they're not getting that stuff.
It's like taking those old microcar estate wagons, like the old Crossley, you know, or like a little Morris, you know, wagon or something, and putting a big old V8 probably in the back.
No, it's cool. Yeah. Hey, which brings me, are there any, like, I saw a car in my neighborhood this week that was never anything I wanted to buy, nothing that, you know, but I knew about them. And some guy, it was a sunny day, a guy had opened his garage. I'd never seen this garage open. And out comes a car. And it was, you know, sitting in his driveway, like he had pulled it out to maybe photograph, probably, I mean, to clean. Probably getting ready to sell it because he's like, yeah, man, I'm never going to use this thing, you know. But it was a, now I don't know the exact year of this one, but from 76 to 80, the smog years when there were no performance cars or anything, Dodge and Plymouth. Plymouth was a car company, for those of you that don't know. That's no longer but Dodge and Plymouth made two versions of this. And there was the Plymouth Roadrunner and the Dodge RT. And they basically had a like a two-barrel 318 smog motor in them that put out probably 190 horses or something. The car could be, you could order all kinds of options. I mean, bolt-on flares and wings. You could make them look like a NASCAR. You could make them look like a, you know, a lot of things. But this car was like absolutely perfect. It had the factory rallies. It had the white glass, the polyglass tires still on it.
Wow. And
it made me think. I kind of forgot about those cars.
Really?
And this one looked kind of cool. It's the kind of car that you would, you know, kind of tool around in, or you could put a late model motor in. And if it's in great condition like this one, put a smog, you know, get the smog motor out and put some fuel injected crate motor in it, and it would be a really cool car. Is there anything you guys have seen or think of that are like cars you kind of forgot about that might not be a bad project? Because I'll give you an idea. I looked up on the internet, one of these with 15,000 original miles sold in Florida for $8,200. Where can you get anything?
Well, you know, one of those Roadrunners that like the kind with the pointy nose and the big giant thing, we had one of those on the rally last year, and I think it was $1 million car.
If it's got a six pack and a Hemi in it, I mean, not six pack, a manual and a Hemi.
It was an original car. You know, it had minor flaws, but I think it was an original car. Wow, what a trip!
Yeah.
You know what? It stumbles on my lap every once in a while, but it's actually an 80s car. Do you remember the Mitsubishi Starion?
Oh, yeah.
I still think those cars are kind of cool. And like with the resurgence of the early gens of the Celicas and the Supras and all that stuff, this was a cool car. I think it was the ESIR, and they did a Chrysler Conquest, I think, when they had a partnership with Chrysler. But it was kind of cool. It was like a little two-door, four-seater, you know, but it was kind of wide-bodied and had that slanted front. It was kind of shouldered, you know.
It kind of was their version of the Celica 2 plus 2, wasn't it? Loved that car. Man, I wanted one of those so bad. I went down and looked at them, and they were, at the time, they were like, oh, I can't afford a car like that. You know, it was so expensive.
and I just did a quick search, and I found some, you know, ones that need a lot of work with, you know, 200,000 miles for $1,500. And then some that are, you know, pretty tidy and in good working order for $14,000 to $16,000. So I think this car might get notable soon. I think with all the people collecting and importing, you know, all the Skylines and all this generation of cars from the late 80s and early 90s, I think this one might get on the radar, especially.
Is this an Aaron Hagar prediction?
This is an Aaron Hagar prediction.
Listen, you say Mitsubishi Starion, and all I think about is Cannonball Run 2,
oh, totally.
Jackie Chan, underwater. Yes. I think it was.
Didn't they have a computer screen in there,
and the guy was full on computers inside? I forgot about that.
Yes, because I mean, my brother and I watched that movie 100,000 times, And I don't know, maybe like Jackie Chan's like first American movie too, by the way.
Maybe,
Then it goes underwater and it goes bloop.
I remember that. Yeah. And didn't they wear like white suits in it?
Yeah.
They had like white jumpsuits and stuff in it. So I think
the movie was so awesome. On.
But it's a cool car, you know. It was turbo. They had a turbo version. It was relatively, you know.
That was the turbo, in the movie too. The story on turbo, all blacked out.
The interiors are nice, you know. They had fully, you know, adjustable seats, and they look kind of plush, but they were deeply bolstered and kind of semi sporty touring, you know. But it's kind of that early influx of Japanese performance, you know, was starting to kind of really really make an effort. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. So my thought on kind of this...
What? Is yours the Mustang too?
It's not. So actually, my initial thought was...
82 Shelby Daytona.
No, it was the 88, the ASC McLaren Mustang convertible that they did the two-seat conversion on. And McLaren has nothing to do with the McLaren we know. Yeah, ASC McLaren was a conversion company. So It was poorly built, but it was kind of very rare. And they did sort of this two-seater convertible conversion with like a hard tonneau cover on it. That was my first thought. But then I thought you guys wouldn't want to hear about more Mustangs, even though I just
it's expected, Matt.
I remember that car. Yeah, I remember that car.
Before you go on, remember at that same era, Matt, I mean, all those wide body conversion kits you could get for the Fox bodies and the I love those, man. Some of the Monroe wide body car on Hot Rod.
There was a Dominator Mustang. There was that JBA exhaust, I think, built with a crazy wide body that was a very famous car.
Yeah,
the JBA Dominator.
Yeah. I apologize that the Daytona I was thinking about was a Dodge, the 80s Daytona. It was a Dodge.
All right, what's your choice, Matt?
I think a fun, inexpensive, little wacky car is the 1991 Lotus Elan M100. Yeah. And it's this little convertible. It's front wheel drive. It's got an Isuzu turbo engine in it.
Looks like a jelly bean, right?
Kind of like a door wedge. The 911 doorway. Lotus
there you go.
Matt, I was just looking. Some guy offered
me. Oh, come on.
One of my buddies offered me three of them. One of them was running and was cherry, and the other two were parts cars. I think for 10 grand or something. He just offered me these probably 6 months ago. I like these. They're terrible, terrible cars. And the Maserati Biturbo too. Same kind of vibe, but
horrible car. Yeah. You know where you always see Maserati Biturbos?
Good job, man.
They're usually sitting behind a gas station or a repair shop where somebody brought them in to get repaired and went, no,
and,
just keep.
And they never lived another day.
If I remember correctly, there's a gas station
down the street from here that has a Rolls Royce and a Maserati Biturbo that have been sitting there as long as I can remember.
Wow. The Biturbo is like 225 horsepower, which was what the Mustang had kind of at the time as well.
Right, yeah.
But something with the turbos, if I remember this correctly, poor heat management, and it would melt the wiring under the engine compartment. And that's why they were just terrible, terrible. But the Lotus Elan, right? So it came out in 91. By summer around 94, we had one. You know, my dad got one, so I drove it. And it wasn't even like by design. It was like somebody owed my dad money, so he took his car, right? And it was just this fun little, like, crazy torque steer. You hit the throttle, and it just pulls.
Yeah, front-wheel drive. Yeah,
front-wheel drive. When you see them, they all had, like, they only made 600 of them. And they're still, like, 15 grand.
Wow.
Right? And they all had like an aftermarket radio, like a JVC or Alpine, just like pull out, you know, the pull out radio. There's something about the leather interior of those cars that, or maybe how you have to get in the car, they wear quickly. And the interiors of those all have to be redone.
Yeah, they're thrashed. Didn't they have like a Miata kind of seat too?
It kind of did, yeah. And the body panels were like all plastic. It was like a fiberglass body. And I think it was a manual convertible top. You had to like, because it was so small, you just kind of pop open this tonneau and you throw the top in there. But it just felt kind of quick and it was fun and it seemed to handle well at the time. I don't know if the numbers were really that accurate, but being a kid, like, you know, my parents would go to bed and at 11:30 at night, I'd sneak into the garage, open it by hand, do like five laps around the block in the neighborhood of that car and then put the car away and close the, I didn't want to hear the electric door open in the garage. So I put it back. And of course, I'm sure every morning they're like, I don't know why this car keeps eating gas by just sitting in the garage, but
why is it always empty?
Why is it always empty? But it was a fun little car. I wouldn't mind having one of those again, you know, because they're fairly inexpensive.
There's
a few aficionados that figured out a couple little modifications. There might be a differential that you could put in the front that helps that torque steer thing, sort of a mechanical solution to it. And there might be like stiffer bushings and shocks that you can do in a chip to modify it. But it's very rare stuff and kind of hard to find. But
well, my friend has three of them. So if you want one, I'll pass it on. He's in Southern California. So
I'm very tempted. I got to go find some more money first.
That's so funny. Yeah, I think he wanted 10 or 12 grand for all three of them. And I was tempted, but I'm like, I don't need three of something. Other than Isettas and Mini Coopers and things, but I don't need three of these. You know, I don't need three of these.
You mean three of anything that you don't already have? Yeah.
Oh, Matt, that's a good one. I forgot about this car. Back in the day, I was 21 years old. This was like my dream car back then because it was kind of attainable. What were they new? They were like 20 grand new or something, weren't they?
I think they were more. I think
were they more? I just remember they were out of my reach, but I thought they were pretty cool. That's really cool. Lotus. I was thinking of the original Lotus Elan, which was why I was hand gesturing, because the original Lotus Elan was this teeny tiny little Lotus, and it had these rotating headlights. So they didn't pop up like this. they rotated, I think, to the outside and revealed the light. And they're really
cute.
Yeah.
You know what, Aaron, you're pretty much right on. The original sticker price, because one sold on Bring a Trailer and they had the paperwork, $27,979.
Yeah, so
it was 28 grand.
Yeah. Well, very cool. Yeah, I didn't realize they only made that few of them.
A 1.6 liter with 162 horsepower.
Yeah. But they did make a turbo, right? Or were they all turbo?
No, that was it. That was with the turbo.
Yeah. Oh.
Hey guys, we should talk about this. This will get Aaron all jazzed up because I just ran across this on the internet. Okay, Legos. He's the Lego guy.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's the only one that has enough time to sit around and do them out of this gang, okay? Because it snows and he has snow days. But they just announced the Lego Land Rover Defender 90, 2,336 pieces. So this isn't something you're going to put together quick. This one's going to take a little bit of snow day time. And what's cool about it is you can put it together stock, and then it comes with all the accessories. Brush guard, some traction boards. It has like a tent you can put on it.
So you make it just like yours. I love it, Brad. I just looked it up. I wasn't aware of this.
April 4th online, it's available. 12 and a half inches long and 6.5 inches wide.
I just texted my wife. Look!
Land Rover!
This is the only one that runs.
$239.99
is what
it's going to be. Ouch. Ouch. But yes, I'm buying. I'm buying two. Because I'll sell the other one on eBay for like $700. That's what it's going to go for.
Pay for the first one.
But it looks the most like a Land Rover. Some of the Lego cars that they've done, like the Ford GT and one of the Porsches, it's so tough to get the curves and everything. You know, you can't really do that kind of stuff with Lego. Yeah. But because these things are so boxy, it really just looks like a Land Rover.
They could do a really good Paul Newman Volvo wagon, I bet.
Yeah, totally. In fact, they'd probably use 80% of the parts from this Land Rover.
Exactly. All that squares up. And you remember,
that's hilarious.
You remember when you were a kid building model cars and you'd go to the store and they had the, you know, the full glue together trick one. And then they had the quick kits for like younger kids.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They could do a Lego that's like for lazy kids. Where it's molded to look like all the Legos are put together, and all you do is like snap the top to the bottom, and you're done.
You know, now that you bring that up, Traxxas, and I like Traxxas, RC cars. It's kind of the RC car for the lazy kid. I liked building the cars back in the day, like the Grasshopper, and you know, like I liked getting
Putting the springs in and doing all the.
Yeah, but then later, you know, you build the kit, you thrash on it for a couple of months, and then you start planning like your modifications, switching to the oil filled shocks, then changing, you know, the motor and but building the kit was kind of fun for me. And now they all seem to come assembled.
Right.
Right.
You know? Because everybody wants it now, Matt. They don't want to. Why did they go to Barrett Jackson to buy a car? Because they don't want to build a car. They just want to buy a car and drive it up. You know,
I've got one RC car, and I just kind of have it as a collectible. But I have one of the Ken Block Hoonigan.
Oh, cool.
Traxxas cars, and I got it, and I took it out, put the battery in, I played with it for 20 minutes, I put it back in the box, and it was fine, but it was like, you don't get the satisfaction of building it and then playing with it and thinking, I built that. So I don't know. I'll have to find a really good kit.
I've got one, but it's frame off right now. It's over the side. And, you know, I'm getting it done one of these days, but I'm not selling it. Yeah.
Maxis actually makes a really nice Defender. I keep wanting to get them, but they're like $600, and once in a while I see them on eBay, and people have done all kinds of mods, and they're $600 or $800, and they're usually gone like that. But I've been wanting one. That they have a Defender 110, And it's pretty nice, but
Listen, you want to dabble into the RC world. The guy you want to talk to is Richard Waitis, our friend at Magnaflow.
I got to look up with Richard.
He's got like these double doors of like a walk-in closet, and the whole walk-in closet is full of RC cars. He built shelves and they're all on display, and he's got like a bench there to get them ready for the race day. And he's got everything you could imagine. He's teamed up with RC companies so he can make Magnaflow exhaust for the gas engine ones. He's got a little Magnaflow pipe that goes on there. That's branded Magnaflow. So he's got the coolest collection.
Boy, if they evolved too. I mean, when I was a kid, I had all the Tamiya, not all, I had a couple of the Tamiya RC cars, the little dune buggy back in the day and all that. But man, have they evolved. I mean, some of these cars, I don't see how they control them. They just hit it and it's gone. I mean, it's gone.
So fast.
Where'd it go? You know, yeah.
When I was a kid, our RC car still had a cord and you had a little steering wheel.
And you held on went in circles and got really dizzy. Now,
when I was a kid, I remember the very first like RC
thing. The landline of RC cars.
Right?
The very first RC car that I ever had was not a car. It was a helicopter. And it had a little box with a big floppy antenna on it, you know, and the helicopter had an antenna on it. And that thing was so cool. But as soon as it got out of distance, it just flew away. And you had to turn it off, and it would fall to the ground. Then you had to go get it and come back and get it. But it was cool. something before we wind it up, way out of subject for cars, but still racing, is April 25th, that weekend, my buddy Mike Hollywood Miranda. If you're a BMX guy, you know that name. He was one of the pros back in the day, rode for Hutch and everybody. Well, him and some other pros are putting together a BMX reunion in Temecula, and they have challenged me to come out and race in the old guys class. So they're sending me a bike because I don't even have – I have classic bikes, but they're going to send me a bike to start practicing on, and if I make it through that, I'll go to the race and show them who's boss, you know? So,
okay.
Yeah. So I'll be going out there. See me hobble in the next week, you know, the first part of, or did I say March? April. Excuse me. April. So if in June I'm like sitting here in a sling and a few other things, you'll know why. But
we know why.
They're doing a bunch of cool stuff. They really thought it through because these guys were racers and they know. We're all getting a little old because they've got their track is in Temecula. They're building it just for this. And it's a downhill track because they know we don't have the pedal power we used to. And then they're doing other things like for guys who don't want to race, they're doing a balancing contest where they've got a big like basketball court and they're going to give away some prizes for basically don't put your feet down. You know, you got to stay within that confines.
Yeah, yeah.
Who can do it? And they got a lot of fun stuff. They're having a party on Saturday night, and it's 80s dress, and you know, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a pretty cool deal. So it's going to be fun. So awesome. Anyways, they've challenged me, so I'm going to race. Damn it, I may regret.
Matt and Brad, I just sent you guys the listing for my buddy's Lotus Elan. It's still up, $12,000 for all three of them.
I saw it. Here's a little pet peeve of mine. I'm just going to gripe and then we'll wrap it up. We'll go. When people say or write original miles, 12,000 original miles, only 3,000 original miles. What's a non-original mile?
Second time around.
Like
the Ferris Bueller effect.
Like, why don't we? Original miles, come on.
It's just got miles. Right, I know. And the thing about these is though they're all low miles because they never ran.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. Rad all these Lotuses are low.
Wait, he wants 12,000 for both cars, but then he says later on that the car's paid off. So
I thought there were three.
Tell him deliver it, right? It's paid off.
Yeah, I thought he said he had three. Maybe there's another one that's not part
three
of this
plus
deal.
Owners.
But was part of my deal.
For a price of one. What a deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Person special.
It looks fun, but here's my thought on this is there are not a lot of parts available for this, especially when you get into body parts and stuff. So don't buy a project. You'll never be able to do it. Yeah. You want to just buy the cleanest one you can, because the difference between a good one and a shitty one is like $9,000 and $20,000. It's like, fuck it. Just buy the one for $20,000 and get the nicest one.
Exactly.
You can afford it. For $9,000 and only have $39,000 into it when you're done.
Right. You're just going to be ending up, especially the plastic body panels. It's not even like you can hammer that out and stuff. It's just a pain in the ass.
Totally. And this is that, if I believe, this is that early ABS, and it was, it's an ABS plastic. So it's like really, it dries out and it flakes and it's really difficult to repair because it just crumbles.
Biggest problem with mid 80s through like early 90s cars are those plastics. We've talked about them here on the show before. They become dust.
They do.
The interior parts, you go to take them apart, every clip breaks off and
it's not like you can plastic weld them back together. You can epoxy them, but you kind of, I don't know what you got to do to restore it. It literally, like you said, it comes apart.
A lot
apart.
Of the car builders that are doing 80s cars, like Jesse Greening, he just did that 80s Camaro. And I know Troy Chapanier did one. And like the A-pillars and everything, they just rip them off and form them out of aluminum and then cover them with upholstery and put them back up. You can't get a good part for them, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Well, there you go.
Like I did in my my Yukon. I pulled them off to put a new headliner in, and two of the clips broke. The beauty of the interior paints is those screws that hold them on now that you can see are painted the exact same color as the mold.
Yeah, right. I just picture these projects like the last scene of the Blues Brothers when they pulled up to the courthouse, right when they stopped, the whole car at once just falls into pieces.
Yeah.
After their mission from God, it's just like, just piled. Like, I just see that happen one day. You come back, it's just a pile of parts and dust. All right.
Hey, Matt, pal. No. Where can they find us online, pal?
Check us out at Shift and Steer is the website, and Shift Steer Media is the social media. And thanks to everyone that made an order for Bravago, for the hard seltzer, at drinkbravago.com.
Oh.
I think all the orders went out. Of Shift and Steer, because we brought it up on the show and you made all those sales. So advertisers, look at that. Matt is getting rich from advertising on Shift and Steer.
Yep.
And also, you guys, hit us up on social, and tell us what cars we left out. What car do you like that is from like kind of forgotten and stuff like that? Hit us up and let us know.
Yeah, because there's some quirky stuff out there.
Hey, pal.
You can find me all over the internet at Aaron Hagar. Lots of snow, and it's getting a nice melt, and I'll be hitting the rally next week, so I'll be posting that stuff. We're always interested in
that rally. Going to be in snow-free country?
Yeah, we got a couple days of rain. I'm not going to be able to get my Morgan down because I couldn't get my trailers, and there's nothing to rent that'll accommodate a three-wheel, so I'm just going to drive the Mini Cooper down, and we're going to rally the Mini Cooper this year, so... I'm excited.
You mean that bullshit? You just wanted heat and because you know it's going to be crappy weather.
Yes. I told my wife yesterday, I texted her, honey, because she's down in Napa. I said, honey, I'll just drive the Mini down and you can drive, you know, the Jeep or whatever you want down as our regular car. And I said, and that way we don't have to stress this year. We don't have to worry about it breaking down. We don't have to worry about being cold or what the weather's going to do. I said, we just drive the Mini and have a nice time.
She was like, oh, all right. Thank you. You're getting smart in your old age.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. Check me out at Bradley_Fanch on Instagram. Also, WinBrad stuff always. And you know, let's keep the comments rolling in on our social. And, you know, we appreciate that. So we're putting up some of these photos. I'm going to, if you listen to the last show, we threw up some cool photos on Instagram. So be sure to go there. And we're going to do it the same way. Those cars we picked, I'll throw up a picture of each of those cars so you know what the hell we're talking about.
Cool.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shift and Stare.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.